Welcome back to the Confessions Podcast, Season 2. This season, we embark on a profoundly important journey, one that brings to light the stories, struggles, and triumphs of Black women living with HIV. In a world where the numbers speak volumes, with thousands of new HIV infections among Black heterosexual and transgender women, it's crucial we listen, learn, and act. Black women's experiences in the HIV epidemic are not just statistics. They are tales of resilience, strength, and hope. This season is dedicated to uplifting their voices, shedding light on the disparities in healthcare, and exploring the courage it takes to live openly and authentically. Join us as we share the courageous stories of six women whose lives and experience offer insight, inspiration, and a call to action for all of us. Welcome to Confessions, Season 2.
I was born in Houston, Texas, and I lived there for the first, 9 years of my life before I moved to Southern California. I am adopted and I have a very large family, so that has influenced my upbringing a lot. I have 9 younger siblings and I'm the oldest. It was always very fun and a lot happening. Also, my parents don't racially identify as me either. My parents are both white. So that has really obviously influenced my upbringing in many ways, being like an interracial adoptee. And I was born with HIV. So it was transmitted from my birth mother to me. The parents who raised me are not HIV positive. So I was a foster child in Texas. My mom and I, we have like a beautiful story. Basically, she was just volunteering at the shelter that I was at. And I just kind of decided that that was my person. She was a single woman, you know, working full-time job. And she decided to kind of take on a baby. I've lived with her since I was 1. So she's, you know, the only mother I've ever known. I was adopted officially right before I was 3 years old. And my dad didn't come into my life until I was around, 1.5 or 2 years old. I went on my parents' first date. That's always like my fun fact when I share. And then after that, I have 2 siblings that are also adopted from the same shelter I am. And then some siblings are adopted internationally as well. My adoption came about mostly because, like many children, unfortunately, my parents were just not fit to be parents. My birth mother was a white woman originally from Hawaii, and she moved to Texas and met my biological father. He was a Black Creole man that was born and raised in the Houston area. I was born HIV positive, but I was also born addicted to cocaine. So obviously my mother had very heavy drug usage while she was pregnant with me. So that kind of is the reason why my parents' rights were inevitably severed. And unfortunately, my birth father went to prison when I was only 4 or 5 months old. So he wasn't obviously around to take care of me, to be a guardian. How it kind of worked in the foster system, at least obviously in the late 90s when I was born, they searched for fit family members that might be able to take me first. I don't have many details, but I'm assuming the screening or whatever process they go through, they were also found not to be like a compatible match. So that's how I ended up in the foster care system. My birth mother really did fight to get me back. But I have a lot of feelings, obviously, when it comes to her for a lot of reasons. She really did fight to get her parental rights back, and it just never came to fruition. I'm assuming they looked, you know, at all the evidence. They had many hearings and, you know, court dates, and they just decided that that wasn't a good decision. That's kind of how I came to be. And then my mom started obviously fostering me first. And so she fostered me for over a year before she finally decided that she was going to like officially adopt me. I have many memories of when I was very little, just always, you know, going to the doctors. I saw the doctor's office, I feel like, a little more often than, you know, normal children. You know, I have memories as far back as me very young, learning how to swallow pills using M&Ms. I remember that very vividly. My mom having to mix my, you know, liquid medication in with, you know, some sort of like chocolate milk or something like that. So I have very early memories of always visiting medical professionals and talking to people and taking medication as far back as I can remember. I didn't know exactly what my diagnosis was until I was, I want to say around 13, maybe a little younger than that, just because my, you know, I think my mom wanted me to be at an age where I could, you know, fully understand and also be safe as well. I think that was like a big component that both of my parents considered. You know, my mom was very honest about, you know, how I came into the world and my adoption background and the trauma experience there. But I also had, you know, other kind of serious medical issues when I was little. My muscles weren't very developed. I had to go to physical therapy a lot. I could not like have control over my muscles. I didn't ride a bike, you know, without training wheels until I was, I want to say 11 or 12. When I was really young in the shelter I was in Texas, I think there was one other foster child who I was close with. We were around the same age, who was also HIV positive. But obviously, I'm too young to remember, and I didn't really maintain a relationship with those people once I was adopted. We still kind of, you know, followed each other from afar, like on social media and stuff like that. And my mom would have contacts with their moms just very briefly. And I myself obviously didn't know like I was HIV positive or, you know, what HIV was. So I did not have like any interactions that I know of with children who were also positive. A lot of my kind of like reflection obviously came at a later age. Since I was fortunate to be in a stable home environment since I was, you know, very young, I didn't really have trauma that maybe kids who are older, who are adopted at an older age do, just because of, you know, the traumas of being in the system or maybe being in a situation that wasn't safe. But that being said, it doesn't necessarily mean I don't have trauma as well. You know, those first 8-9 months of my life were very impactful. I think now reflecting as like, you know, I'm older. A lot of the strife too came from being part of a family where nobody really looked like me as well. I had a brother who was adopted a few years after me who was also Black, but obviously I was a Black girl and he was a boy as well. So there was a gender difference there. And with my parents, that was a lot of the source, I think, of my like pain and trauma growing up. Not necessarily from them, obviously. They're very special. I feel like anybody who, you know, adopts 10 children has to be a little special. And they really do the work in order to understand, you know, what it takes to raise children that, you know, don't share the same identities as you. For many years, my mom also homeschooled us, which was great. So a lot of my like fond memories from childhood, I think, just come from like learning from my mom as well and learning from my siblings and just being in a place where, you know, I felt like 100% safe. I feel like how I was brought into this world and my beginning would be cause, you know, for a lot of pain and trauma in my life. And not to say I didn't have any, and I still do. But like just those small moments, I remember, you know, just sitting around the kitchen table, talking about our days like in depth, feeling like there was kind of nothing that I couldn't talk about or share. And just like learning from the people around me, I think is like those are my fondest like childhood moments. It's just being totally like encapsulated and having, you know, all my people in one area and being able to call my family my people. I was lucky enough having access to medication and being medicated at a very, very young age. And, you know, the disease being dormant in me for countless years. I have memories going back from as far as I can remember just about taking medication, having, you know, all of my syringes and all the liquids and having to mix it with certain things, like kind of being a mixologist and seeing like what tasted better with what, that type of thing. I can remember we went to a camp when I was younger. I didn't know this at the time. I thought it was just kind of like a fun family kind of trip, but I think it was for like families that were either had family members who were infected or affected by HIV and AIDS. So that was something that my parents did that, looking back on it, I'm like very proud of them for doing, and I think was awesome. But I remember, like, you know, my dad holding me in his arms and me with my, you know, my sippy cup with my chocolate milk, like medication concoction or whatever I had that day, and kind of just like holding me on the dance floor. So that was something that was, I think, super positive in my like upbringing. That's a memory that's always like at the forefront. And yeah, just being in the doctor's office, and for every like M&M I swallowed, I got to eat one, which was like, you know, knowing children, that's like, that's a great motivation. So I learned how to take pills probably at a very young age. I want to say I was maybe like 5 or 6 years old. I was pretty young. And obviously that came about because, you know, I was getting older. I could take pills. There's probably a lot of development and medication and all of that. So when I was younger, I took like a, you know, like a concoction of different things. And then as I got older, I've been on Genvoya for a really long time. I remember when I got to switch, you know, from 3 pills to 1 pill, and that was like the biggest thing. I was like, this is so great. I only have to take one, and that's amazing. Cause you know, I was just used to taking so many different medications. Medication is just one of those things where like, that's been my norm. I've had, I don't know how many pill cases in my life, but you know, my mom would set it up for me at night and I had it all organized. So I knew what to take. And I became kind of pretty self-sufficient when I started taking pills and remembering. And, you know, my parents stressed to me that obviously like this is very important. Like it's kind of a non-negotiable. I was a pretty stubborn kid. How they described it to me, I don't know why it kind of clicked. And I think maybe I knew internally, like subconsciously, that like this was important to my well-being. So yeah, I became pretty self-sufficient and taking my medications by myself. But yeah, I'm on Genvoya now, which as you probably know, is just a concoction of multiple different like antivirals in one. So that has been a big blessing. I remember when that we did that change and I was like super excited. But I think just getting over the learning about what other people thought about it and their feelings and their opinions, and also just kind of confronting my feelings about my own like birth mother were probably the two things that I struggled with most in my adolescence. Almost learning the facts about the illness, disease was almost easy just because obviously, you know, there's a lot of information, you know, medically about it. And I had a very special, and I still do, a very special relationship with my doctor I've seen since I was, you know, 9 years old. I still see her. I still talk to her. And she obviously eased a lot of my anxiety about it. She was very nonchalant, which I feel like is something that was very helpful. This is probably the first forum where I've ever talked about it like this much in depth, just because I don't share with a lot of people because of, you know, I think the state of our society and people in general. I'm obviously much more at peace with it now. And it's like I said, it's normal for me. But I think a lot of the outside influences is kind of what, I don't want to say scares me, but what I pull back from, I guess. Because there's some days I'm like, I just want to announce it. Like, I'm like over it. I want other people to know that like there's someone else out here. But then, you know, I look on the flip side and I'm also a Black woman. And I feel like the violence that is already committed like on Black bodies and the like scrutinization of Black women in general, I don't want to add another layer onto that. I've had enough trauma, I feel like, for 2 lifetimes. Like, I don't want to open another door to kind of enact more. So it's always a battle. It's like, I'm an internal processor. So it's always like an internal battle of kind of like, what do I do? How do I stay safe? And how do I, you know, be happy? And, you know, it's also kind of like no one else's, you know, business if I don't want to share with them. I've never really talked about it with anybody except my parents. So that's it for my immediate family. Friends, I can count on one hand the amount of people I've told outside of my family. And that just comes from like years of friendship, and kind of the friends I'm thinking of are like now at this stage more like family. I have never really been in an adult relationship. I had like a relationship in high school that lasted for like months that, you know, was never super serious. So yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that then. And then whenever, you know, I do like engage in like sexual activity, I'm always safe, obviously for other reasons besides that. So I've never really felt like I needed to share that with anybody, any of like my partners or people that, you know, I've been romantically interested in. And then also because I'm undetectable, I've been undetectable for years and years and years. It's like, you know, the possibility of me ever transmitting the virus is very, very, very small. College was pretty normal for me. I think the only time I heard like a comment about, you know, HIV or positive people was in terms of talking about it as like an STD, which it also is. But I think it was also kind of detrimental to me because I think there's not a lot of representation about, you know, people contracting it any other different way. than, you know, sexual relationship. So I only heard being heard it brought up that way. It's not very much a hassle for me to like take my medication every day. I'm open about being like on an antidepressant as well. So that is obviously something that you need to take every day too. And when I was younger, when I was in high school and I was, you know, Olympic lifter for a long time. So I was taking a lot of medications from my endocrinologist to kind of help me with my mental health as well. Like taking all those supplements that can help. So like taking a medication has like never really been like a battle for me. And I know for some people, for multiple different reasons, it can be hard to remember, you know, to take medication every day, or maybe they're not in a space where, you know, they can like remember or take it. But it's one of those things where I feel like it might be nice, but it's not something that it's like at the forefront that I need to like make the change now. Since I was pretty young, I've kind of always wanted to adopt. That's kind of like been where my heart is at. I obviously know that I can have, you know, biological children just like everybody else, but that's not something that was kind of on the forefront of my mind. I think being part of my family and knowing I kind of have this phrase that kind of like biology, you know, means nothing. Like genetics means nothing in terms of kind of my experience and my family unit. And yeah, so that's never really been like a desire of mine. Like having biological children is not something that is something that I'm really like looking forward to or I want to do, but adopting and maybe even fostering is something that has always been on my heart. It's not contingent on my love life and if I find a partner or not. I feel like that's an added bonus if I find somebody that I'm, you know, compatible with and that I, you know, truly love. But I'm not gonna, you know, wait for somebody in order to like build a family. So it's one of those things where like adoption has always been on my heart for a long time for obvious reasons. And then one piece of advice, nothing changes about you. I think that's the one big thing, is that it's something that is a part of you, and try not to like fight it. I think is one thing is you're still you. You're still can be, you know, a healthy person just like everybody else. Like nothing really separates you from another person. And I think the fact that it is kind of like an invisible disease diagnosis is something that is hard on people too. But it really doesn't have to necessarily affect your life if you don't want it to. And I think that's something I would give. That's a piece of advice I would give other people, is it's just, it makes you who you are, but it's also you have the ability to just have a normal life and kind of just lead the life that you want to live.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through season 2 of the Confessions podcast. The stories shared by the brave women on our platform are more than just confessions. They are a beacon of hope, a call for understanding, and a plea for change. Until next time, take care and continue to listen, learn, and advocate for women. Stay brave, beautiful, and strong.